Welcome to a Sunny Side Up Life podcast, a show for the woman who is ready to live an abundant life full of freedom and positivity. I'm your host, Sammy Womack, a nationally recognized money expert, budgeting coach, and your very own hype squad. I'm on a mission to help you break free from survival mode, gain financial freedom, stay motivated, and focus on what matters most. Join the movement and let's start living on the brighter side of life together. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode. Today we are going to be talking about financial minimalism. Before we jump into that, I do want to remind you to please leave reviews if you are enjoying the podcast. Of course, sharing it on social media helps spreading the word, you know, word of mouth, things like that. But reviews help it bump up when people are searching for new podcasts. And I would just appreciate it so much to help the podcast grow and help our message get out a little bit more. So if you have been enjoying the podcast, please take a couple seconds, leave a review. It would mean the world to me. All right. So let's just jump right into this financial minimalism topic. You guys know that I am somewhat of a self-proclaimed minimalist. I did talk about this a little bit in the last episode, just talking about how my intentional living journey really started with decluttering. I feel like I'm kind of a moderate minimalist now with a lot of things. I feel like when you start a brand new goal, you do go a little head first and you get really excited. And for us, that meant downsizing from a 3,200 square foot house to about a 650 square foot house. So an extreme downsize, which also meant, you know, decluttering an extreme amount and really having to adopt a pretty extreme version of minimalism. Not quite like living in an RV or something, but honestly, when we were buried in clutter in that 3,200 square foot house, there were times that I fantasized about living in an RV, even with three kids, because just being so removed from the clutter seemed like just heaven to me. So it was a pretty extreme, you know, 650 square feet, two bedrooms, one bath, three kids, working from home, homeschooling, a dog, a cat, you know, it was pretty intense. And now we're in 1400 square feet. So I feel like we're kind of like moderate minimalist. Our garage is pretty cluttered, to be honest, probably more than I would like it to be. But nonetheless, that is kind of where I started and where I am. That's a short version of my minimalist journey. If you haven't listened to the last episode, listen to that after this one. It's going to give you like a little bit more insight into that journey if you're curious. But a lot of us are familiar with minimalism in our home, and the whole Marie Kondo and like that kind of thing became really trendy for a while there. But how do we apply this to our money? So for me, it does mean decluttering, number one. That's what minimalism is. So when we think about decluttering in terms of money, right? So it's really kind of going through with a fine-tooth comb. It's getting rid of the stuff that doesn't serve you anymore. That's what decluttering basically means. Things that aren't serving a purpose, either they're not practical or they don't bring you joy. One or the other. It should be doing one or the other. So maybe, I guess our electric bill does kind of bring us joy. We like having electricity, things like that. But it's more of like a need. It serves a really strong purpose. And then there are kind of more of the wants, like our hobbies, you know, spending a certain amount on clothing. Like there are some extra type things in there. So if we think of it in terms of our house, we only want to keep things that serve a purpose, that are an absolute need, or bring us joy, or maybe a combination of both. So apply that to our money as well. So we have our needs, and then we need to have some wants. And it's kind of the in-between junk that needs to go. It's like the clutter. It's maybe having too many streaming services, or maybe having a membership that you don't really use or don't really bring you joy or really isn't working for you in this season of life. Or it is kind of going through your spending and with a fine tooth comb and going, no, this really doesn't align with my bigger goals. So kind of the same way you would go through your house in a Marie Kondo, like, is this serving purpose? Does this bring me joy? Why do I have this? We need to start to do the same thing with our money, which we're going to talk about a few ways to actually apply this. But it's kind of, so first decluttering, and then it's kind of organizing. It's like sorting things out into piles. So we're decluttering our closet, for example. You know, we're sorting things out into a keep, a trash, and a donate slash resale pile. So we're kind of need to do the same thing with our money. So we're organizing our money. We're putting things into a spreadsheet or dumping them into a notebook, whatever we need to do. And we're going through them and we're like, okay, this is our keep pile. Maybe your keep pile's probably going to be decently big. This is our like trash pile. Definitely. Why do I even have this? I don't even use that subscription. Or if you're like me, you realize, I think it was HBO Max. I realized at what I was just like, you know, updating my budget. And I realized that Daniel and I were both subscribed to HBO Max. Why were we paying for two subscriptions? That's ridiculous. And then realizing another one of like, we were paying for Paramount Plus, but we actually were using my mom's login, I think. And anyway, so obviously some clutter had piled up in our subscription. So I went through our subscriptions and decluttered and kind of realized that that's what was going on. So it's that same kind of idea of sorting through our closet as sorting through our budget, sorting through our transactions, sorting them out into piles, picking through, getting rid of things that no longer serve us. And that doesn't mean that if you cancel your HBO Max that you can't ever get it again. Maybe it just means your show is on a break or your show is over. That maybe you're binge watching like an old show and you finished it. And maybe you don't really have a reason to have HBO Max for the next few months. Or for me, I pay for the Fubo app whenever I watch baseball. So I can watch the live games and there's no blackouts and stuff like that, like there is with other apps. Anyway, and it's a relatively expensive app. I think it's about $95. So I only pay for it for the 5 or 6 months of baseball season. I don't pay for it the other months. That's decluttering, right? There's no need for me to keep it all those extra months when I'm not actually using it. So you can do the same thing, you know, with your subscriptions or anything else. Or if you're just going through a busy season and you haven't been to the gym in a while and it's like, you know what, I'm just walking my neighborhood or I'm just doing my workouts at home. Maybe it's time to pause the gym membership and save yourself a little bit of money. And that could just be for 3 months or 6 months or whatever. So that's basically, I think, in a nutshell, what financial minimalism is. It's just kind of being organized and breaking down the overwhelm and all of that. So I have a list here of 11 ways to practice financial minimalism. So let's dig into that. First of all, organizing your bank accounts. If you've been here for 5 minutes, you know that I recommend having multiple bank accounts. First of all, I love having a bills checking account, and that's really where your income is getting deposited into either direct deposit or your manual depositing checks in there. And then all of your main bills are coming out of there. These are basically things that we can predict the amount. They have a due date. We know what needs to come out. So I always say leave enough in there to pay your bills between now and your next payday, plus a little bit of a buffer, $50, $100, $200, just so your account doesn't go to zero. Everything else needs to leave the bills account. It needs to go somewhere with purpose. Whatever our spending allowance is for the current budget period, that needs to go to a spending account, a separate checking account. This can be a family account that you and your partner both have access to. You could have a mine and theirs account. You could have one where you each have your own, and then you also have a family. So essentially you would have like three spending accounts. I actually have a new client that I was just suggesting this last night to. They each have their own spending and then they have a family bills account. And I was like, why don't we just get another? I mean, I know it sounds like a lot, but get another checking account. And this is the family spending. This is where we buy groceries. This is where we fill up the cars with gas. This is where we order dinner, right? And then, you know, each partner could have their own spending where they do their personal care, they do their hobbies, they buy themselves clothes, they buy themselves like junk that they really don't need, and they just have fun. So for them, that's how I decided to organize it. For us, and over the past 2 years, we have started to get into travel hacking, which this is something that I don't recommend at the beginning of your journey, but we're 10 years into our journey. We have well overcome our abuse of credit cards. And so now I have a bills credit card and I have a completely separate spending credit card. And my husband and I each have a card for each account. And it's really simple. Our Capital One is our bills. Our Chase is our spending. You know, that's just how I decided to do that. No particular reason why one's Chase and one's Capital One. That's just how it worked out. So organizing those. A third type of account is a sinking fund. That's where you would kind of sink money away slowly throughout the year. A really popular example is, say you want to have $1,200 for Christmas shopping. So you set aside $100 every single month and you set that aside in a separate account. Some people like to have a checking account because then you have a debit card to swipe when you're shopping for gifts, when you're shopping for clothes, when you're paying for registration fees for your kids' activities, you know, things like that could go in a sinking fund. Other people keep it in cash and other people keep it in a savings account because they're like, hey, it's a couple thousand dollars floating around. Might as well earn a little bit of interest in it. Also, having an emergency fund is a really great idea. If you are using a savings account that has buckets, like an Ally account, you could have your emergency fund and your sinking funds all in one account and just divvied up in buckets. But either way, the money is organized. You know for sure what is flagged as your emergency fund, and you know for sure what is flagged towards holiday shopping, travel, home repairs, kids' activities, whatever categories you have in your sinking funds. And we're just really keeping it all organized. So most families, I would recommend having three minimum accounts: bills, spending, savings, and then their savings being divvied up into sinking and emergency funds. I've seen families even have, I don't know, maybe six or eight accounts. I mean, some people that works. Some people like to have a completely separate account for Christmas, a completely separate account for vacations, a completely separate account for emergency funds. Maybe they have a mine and theirs and family for spending. They have three separate spending accounts. You know, whatever works for your family, trial and error, right? And the important thing is that we're keeping it organized. We're keeping it simplified. We're keeping it like sorted out, even if it's digital. And trust me, even if you're like, that's kind of a lot of accounts, I have seen so many great results from at least keeping bills and spending separate. And people are just like, it's a game changer once you really implement it. So number two on my list of ways to practice financial minimalism is keeping track of money going in and going out. So this is essentially tracking your spending, right? And if you are keeping your money in a separate spending checking account, it's even more simple because it's not all tangled up and cluttered up with my electricity bill went out, my water bill went out, oh, there was a subscription. It's just really simple of it's only spending transactions. So it's even easier to keep up with that current balance because it's only spending. It's only spending. So you can really keep up with, well, this is what's left in my account if you're doing a checking account. Or if you're doing a credit card for your spending, you can really keep up with, oh, this is my current balance. This is where I'm at with my spending. Am I over budget or not? Right. So you can kind of keep up with it that way. So also making a long-term budget once a year is really helpful because it really helps you kind of zoom out and look at the big picture instead of getting buried in the day-to-day clutter, right? Getting buried in the day-to-day transactions. And so when we're really making a long-term budget, like a year in advance, all it's really doing is taking a couple of minutes per day or per week. It's maybe 15 or 20 minutes total per week. It doesn't take that long to just kind of check in and just kind of say, oh, yep, I'm on track. Or, oh, I've got a little off track. Let me move some numbers around. Let me reconcile. Okay, yeah, that bill came out. Check, check, check. Oh, that bill was slightly higher than I thought. That's okay. I have a buffer. It just takes a couple of minutes and it really cuts back on the overwhelm. And what that reminds me of is, in terms of decluttering your house, is when I went to the small two bedroom house from having a four bedroom house, my maintenance mode at the end of the day to kind of close down the house for bedtime went from like an hour to like 20 minutes to just kind of tidy up real quick, maybe sweep the floor, maybe vacuum, you know, pick up odds and ends, pick up some trash, whatever. It cut the time dramatically. That maintenance mode was pared down so much. And so that's what it kind of reminds me of when we're checking in with our budget, just kind of the maintenance mode part of our house. Our house is never going to stay 100% clean. There's always going to be dishes to wash. There's always going to be trash to pick up. There's always going to be, you know, pillows to rearrange and toys to put back where they go. There's always going to be tidying up to do. But that's kind of maintenance mode, right? And so I think when we think about that in terms of our budget, there's always going to be tidying up to do. There's always going to be some maintenance mode, fixing the pillows, throwing the trash away, like that kind of stuff. And so that's really important to do in your budget. But you have to do the big picture stuff. You have to do the big declutter of your budget and of your house to get to the point where that maintenance mode is just kind of tidying. It's not decluttering a year worth of mail because you've already done that. Like, you've already purged the catch-all spot on your counter. So it's just real quick. Oh, that's trash. Oh, that needs to be filed. And it's not like a year worth of mail. Same thing with your budget. It's not a year worth of a budget. You've already done the big part. Now it's just a quick tidy, right? So think of it in terms of that. So next on my list is investing small amounts consistently. So again, this is really keeping it simple. This is really keeping it manageable in a bite-sized amount. And this is also about automating it. We love to automate systems. We love to keep it as simple as possible, keep the guesswork down. So this is like, we're not trying to play the market. We're trying to do something called dollar cost averaging. We're trying to just say, you know, honestly, time is our friend. So even if the market is slightly higher today when I buy, time is going to be your friend. So in the long run, it's going to be better to just invest slowly but surely over time. And they've done studies on this. And if you're interested in this, you can dig more into this, read up on it. But this long-term, steady, slow and steady investing does you better in the long run than the playing the market, than the watching for dips and we buy when it's low and we, you know, play the game and we buy and we sell and we get all, you know, panicked and like we see in the movies and stuff. Honestly, there's been a lot of research where that actually is not as good long term as the slow and steady investing, which I think is really interesting. There's also studies that show, I don't have any to link off the top of my head, but you can definitely give it a Google because I've seen this numerous times around social media, where women are statistically better investors because women tend to be calmer, slower, steadier investors than, you know, kind of that, like that stock market bro, that buying and selling stressed guy on the phone that we see in movies. So that's just statistically how it kind of looks. So small and steady investing, automate if possible, even if it's like 10 bucks a month, 20 bucks a month, 30 bucks, like 50, it does not have to be all or nothing. It doesn't have to be maxing out your IRAs, maxing out your 401k. I'm not even maxing everything out. Okay. And we're on track to retire early. So it doesn't have to be all or nothing. It really can be. I mean, obviously the more, the better. If you have it, let's invest it. But also that might come later in your journey. That might be 3, 5, 10 years from now. Okay. That might not be today, but compound interest is going to be your friend. Time is going to be your friend. So the sooner you invest, the better, even if it is small, because that $30 is going to just that's going to earn you interest, and then your interest is going to earn interest, and then that interest is going to earn interest. So play around with a calculator to figure out an investment calculator. Just do a Google investment calculator and play around with, if I invested $30 a month for 20 years at 8% return, which is what I usually, that's a good average. Some years you're going to have more, some years you're going to have less, but I like to do 8%. And see what that number is going to be. Then do the same thing with $50 a month, or play around with, if I did $30 a month for 10 years instead of 20, what would that look like? And look at the principal investment versus the interest earned. And it's pretty fascinating. So slow and steady investing. All right, next on my list, decluttering bad financial habits. So again, this is like subscriptions and services that we don't really use or enjoy or need. This is also vices. So that would be like alcohol, cigarettes, other things. We'll let you fill in the blank there. Gambling, you know, even fast food or impulse shopping. So I've had some people separate out like Amazon. I don't really like to do that for me, because I do get like a lot of grocery type items, like my dog food, my makeup, my hair products. I get a lot of that on Amazon. But if they do have like an impulse problem where they're buying like junk on Amazon, stuff they really don't need, they'll kind of have just an Amazon line, so they can really kind of have, honestly, like that slap in the face moment of, wow, I'm really spending that on Amazon, or wow, I'm really spending that on my alcohol or my cigarettes or my gambling, my sports betting, like whatever it is. And sometimes it's them calling out their partner. It's like, I've tried to tell them that their vice is like hurting the family, so I'm putting it in its own light item, and I'm going to really show them like what this totals up to. I'm not saying that's the best way to approach it. Don't get me in the middle of your marriage arguments here, but I have had clients do that because they're like, I think that they just don't really realize how much it's adding up to. And they're not trying to like start a fight. They're really just trying to be like, look at the proof. So that's something that could help. So like boring bills. Okay. These are things like your insurance, your cell phone, you know, things that are like, we want good insurance. Obviously we want good cell phone service, et cetera, et cetera. But it's things like, even some places we, in our area, we can shop around for our electric companies. I know some people are like on co-ops, or you rent and you don't have a choice. And the insurance, like if you're getting the same coverage, you know, who cares? And cell phone. It's been maybe a year now, I switched from AT&T to Mint Mobile. My Mint Mobile is insanely cheap. I pay like per year now, so I don't even know how cheap it is. I know June's phone is $15 a month. I know that because she pays me back with her allowance. So hers is $15 a month. Like, that's super cheap. And we were like, oh, is it going to work? We don't want some like discount, you know, crappy cell phone service. But like for Mint, they go off of the Verizon towers and the AT&T towers. And we've been really happy. I mean, I still have bad service in some places, but I did with AT&T. So that's just on living in East Texas around a lot of really tall trees. That's, you know, so things like that. For the past 4 years, I've worked with over 100 clients one-on-one, real women who took action on making big changes to their finances. My coaching sessions are designed to give you completely personalized budgeting support. Together, we'll organize your bills, build better spending habits, pay down your debt, build your savings, and invest for the future. I'll help you get a system in place that will set you up for success for years to come. I'll answer all of your questions along the way, talk you through all of your mindset blocks, and most of all, I'll be there to hold you accountable. So this time will be the time that you'll finally stick to your budget and make those dreams a reality. Visit asunnysetuplife.com/coaching to apply today to see if one-on-one budget coaching is right for you. Next on my list is intentional gift giving and gift receiving. So what I like to do, you guys know I'm a big thrifter. So I love to go to garage sales, thrift stores, estate sales, things like that. So what I do is I have a separate plastic box, like plastic storage tote in my garage with a lid on it. So it's not getting like dirty or anything in my garage. And if I come across something at a garage sale or a thrift store that is a good deal and I think would reminds me of someone, I set it aside in that box. And then when it's their birthday or when it's Christmas or Mother's Day, you know, if it's for my mom, mother-in-law, grandma, something like that, I have a gift ready to go, something that I got at a bargain. And I hardly even notice out of my budget because it kind of comes out of like my normal spending money. So things like that, being really intentional. And it's not even just about the bargain. It's about if you come across something really thoughtful, even if it isn't like thrifted, if you're just like at Target and you come across something that's really thoughtful or you see something pop up on your For You page and I'm like, oh, so-and-so would love that for their birthday. I'm going to go ahead and buy it. Just so I'm being really intentional with something that I'm giving them. It's something that they actually need or will enjoy instead of just going and grabbing something last minute that maybe isn't a really intentional use of your money and something that might not be super useful or super enjoyed by the person who's receiving it. So, you know, keeping a box could be a good way to do that. And ask people what they want. I know that's like, like our boomer parents and grandparents are just like, that's so tacky. Like, I know like wedding registries, baby shower registries, usually they kind of scoff at that. They're just like, oh, that's so tacky. But that's fine. We're millennials, maybe even Gen Zers listening. Like, we break the rules anyway. So ask people, hey, is there something that you were wanting particularly for your birthday or for a holiday? Gift cards are great. You know they're going to get used. Like, if you know that someone goes to Taco Bell gift card, right? It's not going to be clutter. And at least it's going to be a decent use of your money. So I like to give things that can be consumed as well. I do this a lot for my kids. Their Easter baskets were completely things that could be consumed. They were either candy or like bubbles, like to blow outside bubbles, or beauty products. I'm pretty sure that was it. A lot of times I'll do art supplies, like things that will be used up and won't become cluttered. They will actually get used, not just another stuffed animal, another whatever, something that they don't need. Experiences, also great. Local places, like at least being intentional with where you're spending your dollars. Maybe it's a local restaurant gift card. Maybe it's a local crafted item or something like that. Just, you know, being a little more intentional with it. And I think that it helps cut down on the spending clutter. It's not just buying for the sake of spending money. Like, you've put thought into it. You've put thought into how you put thought into your end, which is the dollars. You've put thought into the person receiving it. Is it going to be useful? Is it going to actually bring them joy? Or is it just something to fill a blank? You've also put use into where the dollars stay. So there is like a third party of who are we actually giving our money to? A local artist, a local restaurant, or are we just giving it to Amazon? Sometimes the answer is we're just giving it to Amazon, but at least we consciously know. We're like, oops, this was last minute. I need to get something on Prime. That's, you know, but at least think about it. At least be intentional with it. All right. Next on my list, finding free or cheap ways of entertainment. So for me, this was like when I did start slowing down, kind of adopting more of slow living. This was like rediscovering a lot of my old hobbies. This was like what brought me joy when I was a teenager. And I just had so much free time to kill before I had a job and kids and responsibilities. So this was like art, sewing, painting, drawing, puzzles, things like that. Reading books. My husband got back into gaming over the pandemic. We didn't even have a gaming console until 2020, and he bought an Xbox. And, you know, I don't care. Maybe it is quote unquote a waste of time. But I mean, we're sitting at home. We're not out at a restaurant. We're not out just buying things for entertainment's sake. We're at home. And actually, it is cheaper in the long. I know Xboxes are expensive, but right? Rediscovering old hobbies. Or what about finding new hobbies, trying something new, trying a new, reading a new type of genre in books or something like that, trying an art, see if your, like our library, for example, offers tons of free events. I literally just saw a notification this morning on Facebook. They're doing an adult, I think it's like adult bad art night or event or something, and it's free. For adults, art, there you go, something fun. Maybe that's trying something that you've never tried. So checking Facebook for events, checking, you know, if you do have like community centers or your library hosts events or your city hosts events, things like that, following those pages. We went to an event for the solar eclipse that was put on for free by the library. They had free glasses, they had music, they had some booths set up. You know, just free space in the park to go and sit. And it was literally free. So there's lots of things like that. And I feel like I'm a little more aware of this because, like, as homeschoolers, you do kind of have to get a little creative with like field trips and what places are free and things like that. So I know a lot just offhand of like what museums are free or what museums have like discount days, or we have one museum that they're donation only. So, you know, go throw $5 in their donation pail and they'll let you come hang out as long as you want. So there's lots of different things like that. Also, you know, nature. I know that's not everybody's cup of tea, but hey, nature is most of the time free. You know, there are like entrance fees sometimes to certain trails or camping or things like that. But even that, it's about the cheapest vacation you can get. So if you haven't tried it, maybe that's kind of your push of like, let's just try it. Maybe you just had a bad experience once as a kid or something, or maybe you're just, you hate bugs, but I promise you, like, it's pretty fun. And just to kind of unplug as a family, it's so good for the soul. The last thing under that list is inviting people over instead of going out. The other day was my sister's birthday, and we have a pretty big family. It's a lot of us. It's 10 or 15 people if we want to go out to eat. So I was like, you know what? We're not going to go out for her birthday. She was fine with it. She's like, no, low key. Like, and I was like, I'll cook dinner. I cooked dinner for our entire family for about $60. If we would have all, I don't know, there's 10, 12 of us or so, we would have all went out. It would have been easily $300 or $400. But I cooked dinner for all the people and we had tons of leftovers for $60. So invite people over, take turns. You know, we host this weekend, you guys host next weekend or something like that. I promise you, it's still cheaper. Next on my list, choosing quality over quantity and not buying into trends. So again, this is something that I've really gotten into with thrifting. It's really looking for places that you're going to find more long-lasting items. This is like furniture pieces. This is clothing items. This is, you know, not just buying the Shein top. This is buying a top, a shirt that's going to last you 10 years, right? Not something that you're going to wear a couple times and it's going to rip. Same thing with furniture, you know, and that might be, okay, we have to buy something vintage, something used, something thrifted to be able to squeeze it in our budget. But honestly, that's better financially and it's better environmentally too, because that's all the things that aren't going into the landfill. That's all the things that aren't going to waste. So it's looking for pieces that are going to last you a long time and honestly looking for pieces that are going to that reflect your style more and aren't just a whim of a trend that you're going to get burnout on. It's more of like long lasting. What's crazy to me is as I'm kind of going into my thrifting, kind of rediscovering my clothing style, I'm actually reverting back to my teenage self more and more. My teenage self had a very like witchy kind of room. I loved like Sabrina the Teenage Witch. My whole my whole room was basically the same color orange that my dining room is now. Just that like terracotta almost orange. I had suns and moons everywhere, just like I do now. You know, I wanted to dress very like whimsy goth, which is what I'm kind of trying to get into now, more of like a boho. And I think about all the years in between where I was trying to like follow trends of like the modern farmhouse and the whatever trends. And I'm like, that's not really me. The real me was like that teenager girl before she was influenced by influencers, before she watched HGTV, before she read magazines, like just buying stuff that looked good and felt right. Right. So kind of trying to get back into that of like, I'm not going to get tired of this stuff. Obviously, in 20 years, I've been liking this stuff for 20 years. So kind of going more into that. And it's also kind of, you know, thinking about like the quality of stuff. It's kind of like investing almost in a good pair of shoes, right? So you might spend $100 on a pair of shoes, but if that, like boots, for example, if they last you 5 years, rather than getting like a $40 pair that's going to last you 1 year, you know, mathematically in the long run, what's better? And so you kind of have to like do that analysis. Sandals are a good one, like water shoes, like Tevas or even Birkenstocks. You know, they're expensive, right? But they're probably going to last you a lot longer in the long run, right? Even though they are more expensive. So just kind of thinking about that. And thrifting is a great way to do that, which leads me into my next point. Thrifting. So a lot of things are like things that you're only going to use once or just a couple of times. I love to thrift. Costumes, formal wear. So like I was recently in a wedding. I thrifted my dress, wore it once. I'm like, who are we kidding? I'm never going to wear this dress again. I immediately put it in my pile to go in my next garage sale. If it doesn't sell in my next garage sale, I'll just donate it. I spent $10 at the thrift store anyway. Like I knew that this wasn't a financial investment. This wasn't buying a pair of Doc Martens that I was going to wear for 10 years, right? It's not the same thing. Costumes are another one. Get them at a garage sale. Let your kids wear them for one Halloween and then donate them or put them in your next garage sale. Party decor. I'm a big on like, Melanie's last birthday was like nature themed. So we went to the thrift store. I found some tablecloths, a table runner that were nature themed, bought them at the thrift store. And as soon as the party was over, put them in my garage sale pile. I'm like, who are we kidding? I'm never going to use this again. Like, don't even pretend like it's a great investment if you know that it's not. Or the flip side of that is like, I do have some pieces that it's like a three-tier kind of display that you'd put like cupcakes and cookies and stuff on at a party. I did spend a decent amount of money on that because that's a quality item that I literally use for every single party that I host. I'm going to get my money's worth out of it. So it's kind of just knowing like what that breaking point is. Same thing as that is kind of just, you know, looking for those quality items of things that you are going to have for a long time, or just looking for a bargain for those things that you're maybe going to use once. And not hanging on to things, pretending like that bridesmaid's dress was a great investment. It served its purpose. Let's declutter it. Move on. It served its purpose with the money that you spent on it. Donate it, resell it, whatever, and move on. Same idea of decluttering our stuff, decluttering our money. Next on my list, waiting 24 hours before making a purchase. Or kind of what I like to do is if I see something like on my For You page or just an influencer sharing something on Instagram, I will maybe follow their link and add it to my Amazon wish list or save the pin to my Pinterest boards. A lot of it is like outfit inspiration or makeup products and stuff like that. I'm like, next time I'm shopping for, I literally just did this with concealer. Next time I'm looking for a new, when my concealer runs out, I need to buy new concealer. I'm going to go to my Amazon wish list and I'm going to be like, wait, what brand was it that random influencer girl said to use? I'm going to try it because now I'm out of concealer. Instead of, you know, having 10 different bottles of concealer in the drawer. So it does kind of help, you know, add it, make a wish list, make a Pinterest board, or put things in your cart and then close out of it. Are you still thinking about it 24 hours, a week later, or have you forgotten about it? Did you just get that hit of dopamine by like adding it to your cart or adding it to your wish list? And that's kind of all you needed. Or did you want to just save it as inspiration? For me, usually clothes, if I see influencers with clothes, I like to save them to my Pinterest board because really all I want is inspiration for when I'm thrifting next. I actually don't want that exact skirt that she has. I want to remember, hey, that was kind of a cool outfit that she put together, like a graphic tee and a leopard print skirt. That I actually kind of liked that. So I'm going to save that to my Pinterest board. So when I'm thrifting next time, I can look for a leopard skirt and a graphic tee. I don't have to go and buy whatever expensive brand that she's promoting. I just kind of like the idea. So that really helps. It really helps you kind of calm down and not just go from like a hit of dopamine and just like, yes, buy all the things when, you know, that's probably not aligned with your ideas. Or it's kind of just saving it for maybe when you do have it in your budget. Because, hey, we're allowed to buy stuff that makes us happy. That's okay. But just making sure that it does align with the budget when we are hitting purchase. Next on my list, we're almost done. Two more. Next on my list is managing specific sinking funds. So we kind of touched on this, like organizing the accounts, but like keeping it simple when you are doing those sinking funds. Those would be things like your kids' activities, holidays, clothes, home repairs, vehicle repairs, pets are another great one, things like that. But that is also not having too many. Like keep it simple, 5, 10, that's plenty. That really is plenty. I've even had some clients literally just have one that's just called sinking funds. And they kind of know in the back of their head, yeah, I can use that at the vet. I can use that when my kids need new clothes. I can use that when I need an oil change. And they don't even worry about the different categories. But it does help to kind of, like I said, have that in a separate bank account. Keep it simple. Keep it over there. Keep it organized. If you do use something like Ally, take advantage of the bucket system. Or if you do cash, you can do the cash envelopes for your sinking funds. Literally, physically divide the money up. Last one on the list. Tackling one small debt at a time. So again, this kind of goes back to the being organized with your money, doing slow and steady steps, not getting all panicked and cluttered up with ideas. It is just like organize your debt list, right? Do a brain dump and then kind of go back and reorder them. Put them in the order that you want to pay them off. It'll help you really stay focused and really keep it simple, doing one at a time. It can be the smallest balance if you want to do the debt snowball, just kind of get a quick win. It can be the highest interest if you want to do the avalanche. It can be the one that has the highest monthly payment. It can be the one that causes you the most stress. There's no right or wrong. Honestly, it's mostly about what's going to get you most excited, what's going to get you motivated, what's going to help you stick to your budget, what's going to get you fired up of actually making progress. So I don't care which order you put them in, whatever helps you get excited, but just put them in an order, go ahead, think it through, decide where you want to focus any extra money you have. And so you're going to focus on whatever you put first on that list, and you're going to keep paying minimum payments on everything else. We're not going to do that divide and conquer because all it does is get you scattered. All it does is get you feeling like you're going in a million different directions and not having any wins at all. So really stay focused. Pick one debt, hit it hard. Anything extra, all your extra focus goes to that one debt until it's gone. All the other debts, just keep paying the minimum, chugging along, slow and steady progress. When that first debt is gone, then you can tackle the second one. There will be time. Remember, slow and steady. Keep it organized. Keep it controlled. It is going to really help. That is my whole list, you guys. I hope that this episode was helpful. Minimalism is something that I'm really passionate about. Money is something that I'm really passionate about. So kind of finding the connection and bridging the gap between how do we make these two coincide. And so hopefully, maybe if you've already tackled minimalism in your house, this will be really relatable for you, or maybe it will help you bridge the gap. Maybe you're tackling your money now, but you know you want to tackle your house at a later date. Maybe it'll help you kind of bridge the gap and you can enjoy some of my metaphors and analogies that I had for you guys. So I hope this was really helpful. Again, don't forget to leave a review and share on social media. I appreciate you guys so much. And that's all for me.
Thanks for hanging out for another episode of a Sunny Side Up Life podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend and leave a review. 5-star reviews are what help the podcast grow. Don't forget to check out the episode show notes for links to everything that we talked about in today's episode. And if you want to access all of my free resources or you want to learn how to work with me one-on-one, head over to asunnysideuplife.com to get started. And if you want to keep up with me in the day-to-day, don't forget to follow me on social media at asunnysideuplife. Well, that's all for me this week. Bye, guys.